work of exploring our religious closets a little bit again this morning. It feels to me like we've made a good beginning on something there, and at least for my part, I'm still finding that image or that metaphor useful. That may not be the case for you, I don't know, but if it begins to become annoying or a barrier to kind of being open to ideas and conversation internally and externally, then please tell me, because I'd be happy to give way. But if that's not the case, then I'm going to stay in that idea space a little bit. One of the things that can happen when we start poking around in what we believe, and sometimes poking around in what we used to believe, or what we think we believe but don't behave, or what we think we should believe but suspect we don't, or like there's always kind of all of that stuff. One of the things that can happen when we start poking around in all of that is that we can have sort of moments of what I would call honest discovery. And they can happen in all sorts of ways. Sometimes we work really hard for them. Sometimes they're very conscious discoveries. We work to make them happen. We read and we journal and we reflect and we pray and we contemplate and we dialogue with others and we haul all the boxes of belief out of the closet and we label them and we put them in piles and categories on the floor, and we don't stop. We just keep on digging until we find the thing that we had this sense that we were digging for. So sometimes moments of honest discovery happen that way. And sometimes they just kind of feel like they happen to us, not because of us. And that's an interesting experience, right? We're working with our, maybe we're working with our exploration. We move some clearly labeled thing in our life and like, pow, sitting behind it, you know, is this thing, this other thing. We're rolling along through life and we realize, wow, I didn't know I believed that. Or perhaps more disconcertingly, I didn't know that I don't believe that. We just have these moments of kind of honest discovery. And lots of times, those moments of honest discovery are tied to ideas. They're connected to, we can use lots of different words for ideas. I'm going to use the word idea this morning for reasons that will become apparent. But lots of times those discoveries are connected to concepts or notions or sort of thoughts about things that come into our lives and they shake things up. They just kind of rattle our world around a bit. And they change us, they change the way we think, they change the way we see the world, they change the way we act in it. We've heard a bunch of stories about that this morning, right? These experiences, I'm on my way to the beach, that one's just stuck in my head for me this morning, Teresa. So, you know, and this, there's this intersection, and what do I do? How do I live in this intersection, this moment in life? And then we make a choice, and we have an experience, and that impacts the way we think about what we believe. Maybe it refreshes something. That's sort of the story you told. I believe I need to make space for these things, but I forget when I'm on a mission. And that happens. And then we need to go, what? And we're refreshed. And we remember that that matters. I've often referenced Jesus' inclination to insert new ideas into the context of the people that they were with. And frequently, the way we have the text of those experiences is that Jesus says something, or it's attributed to Jesus that they say something like, you have heard it said, but I say. Which is like, you know, beep, 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 incoming idea, right? You know, like, get ready for something that you didn't expect, something that you're not familiar with, something that is not the idea you had in your head, mind, heart, life practice when you arrived in this space today. That phrase, in terms of actual text, occurs most often in the Gospels of Matthew and Luke, and it occurs most frequently and systematically in what's usually called the Sermon on the Mount. Now, that is an interesting chunk of sacred text. If you ever want to have a deep dive into a super dense package of ideas that are all attributed to Jesus, just read that. Just jump right in and read Matthew chapter 5 through Matthew chapter 7 in particular. That's sort of the extended version. Luke's is more compressed. And it's an interesting section for lots of reasons, but one of the reasons that's an interesting chunk of text is because it starts off with this section that most commonly gets referred to as the Beatitudes, which is just like this little, it's almost like a poem. It's sort of how it sits in terms of text. But what happens in it is that Jesus, in like 20 lines or so, basically overturns most of what would have been his community or audience or disciples' world views about who's got a good life and what it means to have one. Just like stands that whole set of ideas on their head. And then it continues sort of in that kind of density and intensity for like, you know, three chapters. It's like I kind of counted the headings in a particular translation the other night when I was going through this, because I was thinking these things feel like TED Talks, right? Like they're these super compressed, pithy, like pow, now you can go have a coffee and think about it. There's 19 of them. And so in Matthew. So if you actually sat down and read through all of that, it's like listening to 19 TED Talks without a coffee break. Like the idea density in that collection is so high, it's incredible. And that would be true even if it was just like familiar ideas, but it's not, because most of them are prefaced with, you have heard it said, but I say, and then here comes the like upside down idea. So the density at which the stuff comes at you in terms of new ideas in that text is just really amazing. Now, for me, I mean, my mom's here, so this is, I have to tell this story true. Okay, I can't just like, somebody asked me the other day, like when preachers tell stories, like, are those stories true? And I'm like, yeah. Let's talk about the nature of storytelling, shall we? Because I felt like I needed a little bit of room for how do you tell a story to make a point as a bard, or a, you know, like a, how do you do that function? My mom's here, so I can't even dress this up. So mom can just tell you flat out if this is true. But I mean, I think the facts will sustain my understanding that I went to church prenatally. I was there from go. And from pretty early on, how old was my mom when I stood up on the bench and I started preaching back at the preacher?
You weren't even a year.
Okay, so this you know, new idea thing, that's apparently that's genetic. Like that, this. So if you grew up with these texts, they can start to feel like there's nothing radical about this. I know what it says in Matthew 5-7, you know, blessed are the this's and the that's, right? If you grew up with them, you lose, it's easy to lose track of what they might have sounded like to the people who were hearing them and encountering them. That's why that little, you've heard it said, but I say phrase is so important, because it signals us that something is about to get overturned. Something is about to be introduced by way of a new idea that's going to rock the boat in a really big way. For the people who would have heard these sayings for the first time, they were mind-blowing. They were world-altering. They were threatening. And if we ever wonder about what those ideas felt like to the hearers, all we have to do is look at the organized response to them. Because what the politically organized response was to make sure we had the troops on hand so that the riot wouldn't get out of control. And what the religious organization's response was to kill the idea generator. So you know that what's going on in this set of ideas has got some heft to it, right? When we are on spiritual journeys of exploration, which I continue to believe characterizes this community more than anything else, when we're on those kind of journeys, if we're genuinely on them, we will encounter new ideas. Sometimes we'll encounter them because we went and dug them out, and we just, like, I'm not going to quit till I get to the thing behind the labeled box in my closet. There's something back there, and I'm going to find it. And sometimes they will come to us like we were driving down the road, and what do we do about that? And sometimes they'll come to us as an unanticipated and perhaps even unwelcome experience. But we will encounter new ideas. And if we're actually spiritually exploring, I think having some sense of how to respond to a new idea is actually a really important skill. It's a really important kind of frame of mind and being to be able to carry with us through life. Otherwise, new ideas are just threatening. They're just things that we need to get past or put away or guard ourselves against or trying to find an end run around. Like, just don't go there, because they're going to mess with our lives. Corrine, who directs Slam Camp, and to whom I also have the privilege and occasion to be married, so this all happens in our house. Corrine is one of the most effective researchers that I know in terms of gathering ideas. She just, there's no off switch for the idea gathering intake hopper for Corrine, I don't think. It's just always, she's always watching for ideas. And then plugging them in to what she's doing. And so one of the things that sometimes happens is resources come into our house that have to do with that. And one of them that came into our house this last week was a book that I brought with me. First time I read this book, it just knocked me out. I think it's beautiful. I think it's wise. And I think I must have put it on the stand already because it's not in my bag. Let's see. Yes, I did. Look at that. Crean's also the organized one in the house. The book is called What Do You Do With an Idea? Ostensibly, this is a children's book. I'm going to read us this book, and I'm going to put big pictures of its pages on the wall, because I think this book is wise and beautiful about encountering new ideas. And I want us to have an encounter with it. So, let's just see. There. So I'm going to read it to you, and I'll show you the pages of it like this, you know, like a good storyteller of the children should. But the big version's up there. All right.
If you stand there, though, you're going to be in the way of the projection.
I'm going to do what?
You're in the way of the projection.
If I'm back here?
Oh, okay. That's okay. Yeah.
I know this puts the book a long ways away from you, but that way I can still get the down button.
But every time you move the book, it comes into the path of the projector.
Could I get somebody else to come and push the down button?
Stay out of the way. I can do it.
I was
going to
hold the book. I was trained.
Oh.
I've been trained to hold
the book. I have. So it's an amateur night. Right now. But I don't know this.
I'm not even kidding.
I know, I believe you.
This is part of children's librarianship, learning how to do this.
Jane has a graduate degree in how to hold books. I don't even have an undergrad degree in how to do it. So let's just see what happens. I'll do my very best, Jane. And if it's just too frustrating, just come and take the book out of my hands. The author, Kobe Yamada, and the illustrator, Mae Bessem, this is not their only book together. And just what a great collaboration. Anyway, I'm going to stop foaming and just read the book.
But do know that your years as a parent gives you like the minor.
Yes. Okay, I have an actionable minor in how to read books. Okay. One day, I had an idea. Where did it come from? Why is it here? I wondered, what do you do with an idea? At first, I didn't think much of it. It seemed kind of strange and fragile. I didn't know what to do with it, so I just walked away from it. I acted like it didn't belong to me. It's wise already, isn't it? But it followed me. I worried what others would think. What would people say about my idea? I kept it to myself. I hid it away and didn't talk about it. I tried to act like everything was the same as it was before my idea showed up. But there was something magical about my idea. I had to admit, I felt better and happier when it was around. It wanted food. It wanted to play. Actually, it wanted a lot of attention. I don't know about you, but I'm thinking about my experience with new ideas while I'm reading this and just going, this is just genius. It grew bigger, and we became friends. I showed it to other people, even though I was afraid of what they would say. I was afraid that if people saw it, they would laugh at it. I was afraid they would think it was silly. And many of them did. They said it was no good. They said it was too weird. They said it was a waste of time and that it would never become anything. And at first, I believed them. I actually thought about giving up on my idea. I almost listened to them. then I realized, what do they really know? This is my idea, I thought. No one knows it like I do, and it's okay if it's different and weird and maybe a little crazy. I decided to protect it, to care for it. I fed it good food. I worked with it. I played with it. But most of all, I gave it my attention. My idea grew and grew, and so did my love for it. I built it a new house, one with an open roof where it could look up at the stars, a place where it could be safe to dream. I liked being with my idea. It made me feel more alive, like I could do anything. It encouraged me to think big and then to think bigger. It shared its secrets with me. It showed me how to walk on my hands because, it said, it's good to have the ability to see things differently. I couldn't imagine my life without it. Then, one day, something amazing happened. My idea changed right before my very eyes. It spread its wings, took flight, and burst into the sky. I don't know how to describe it, but it went from being here to being everywhere. It wasn't just a part of me anymore. It was now a part of everything. And then I realized what you do with an idea. You change the world. The end. The beginning. What do you say? Huh? The first time I read it, I was just like, ah, I don't know, words failed. I was completely knocked out. I'll pass it around. I realize that's a risky thing to do as a communicator because I might as well stop talking right now. I mean to be heard, but I want you to have the experience of seeing the artwork up close, not kind of like this, because it's really, really brilliant. So here's what I want to do, just for a few minutes. If we had time. Maybe we should do this next week. I don't know. You tell me afterward. But I was tempted to read this like it was officially sacred text. To read it with a Lectio Divina kind of practice. So if I was to do that, we just got the first pass where I would read it once quickly. You would sort of ask yourself the question: did anything strike me? And we would read it more slowly and reflect, and so on and so forth through the whole process. We're just going to touch on part one a little bit. Was there anything in that reading of that story that struck you particularly? I'm going to turn off the recording now. This will not be part of the podcast. So if you're listening on the podcast, this is where you get to do your own thinking.